Welcome back to Pitch Invasion, episode number 10, and we're going to take some time now and focus on the upcoming, so I guess the return of the leagues, both in South African football, the PSL, as well as the European football. And we're going to start with the African game, and as far as South Africa is concerned, the past couple of weeks, in fact, the last round before the international week, we saw a lot of draws, a lot of nil-nil draws as well. And I guess it doesn't surprise you, Ola, that an article like this has come up. There's an article on Sport 24 that has sort of gone back and had a look and suggests that this is South Africa's worst goal drought in 59 years. And Ola, your thoughts on that?
Before I get into that, I was just... it's a great read, to be honest with you, Anne, but... I was just confused that, when they say in the last 59 years, because you've got to remember, I think the NSL only formed in 92 where all the leagues got together and, South Africa as a whole, there's one league. So prior to that, there were separate leagues, because of apartheid and everything. So when you say the worst goal drought in 59 years, I'm a bit confused because essentially there were two separate leagues because of apartheid. So I don't know, is that considering both leagues or, separately?
Imagine when you say 59 years, you're going as far as... 59 years will be 1959, actually.
Yeah, 1959. So, that was deep in apartheid from then up until, like I said, the NSL was formed in 92. Yeah. And there were two separate leagues. So, Jomo Sono tearing it up on the one end of a society, and then I don't know what was going on the other end of the society.
Well, we haven't gone through the records of all the season, but let's see for the benefit of the doubt that
in the last 15
years, this is the worst season. The truth of the matter is that something has to change about the way football is played in this country, and that is, there has to be a conscious effort to change this whole mindset of, where do you draw a line between trying to play the skill or show off, and when you need to go for goals. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Bafana scoring 6 goals. When was the last time we saw...
They could donate one of those goals to, the 6 games we had on the weekend.
Exactly.
And they'd still win 1-0.
So you find that teams play good football. Sometimes you actually enjoy the game. But a lot of work needs to be done where... I'm a huge fan of Klumpo Kekana. Because I think that the midfielders in South Africa are a bit of the problem because
just don't score goals.
The guy is, I still remember, it was Yeye. I was watching one game, it was Bafana versus Nigeria in 2013, Nelson Mandela Challenge, and he's free.
I know.
There.
Exactly.
And then he does the most unthinkable thing and puts the ball behind his back, and the defenders come.
And he turned.
And then he
had the shot. I know exactly. That moment.
That happens all too often in the PSL, where the player and I'll give you another example. It was Sundowns versus Barcelona at FMB, and I was sitting in the box very close to the corner flag there, and pressed it out. Goes all the way. Next thing he wants to do.
I think the lights were too bright. Barcelona 1-1 to Sturgeon.
Oh my God, sir.
But can I just answer? Okay, we're going to stick to the worst goal drought because obviously, like I said, not that I've got an issue with the article, but I would just like more depth to it. But in sticking to the article, right? What I'm going to say might not be popular, okay? But this is the truth.
Disclaimer.
I think the way in which our soccer in South Africa, the PSL, is marketed, right, is marketed around entertainment that is based on getting people excited as opposed to results, right? And the other aspect to that, and it pains me to say this because I was born and I grew up in the township and I'm black. But I think the narrative the narrative of South African marketing has to change. And maybe the Kasi, the Diski narrative, is too centered around a certain population. Whereas when you look at Bafana Bafana of the old, the great teams, Tinkler, Fish, Bartlett, McCarthy, Chaich, and then you add...
Do you put
Issa? No, no, don't put Issa. No, take them out, right? And then you look for Shewu, Linda Buthelezi, right? So there's a good mix, a good balance. I look at the Springboks today, a pure judge, right? Bongi Mbonambi. Then you look at Siya Kolisi, who's our captain, and then you look at Cheslin Colby, right? And then you look at Malcolm Marks, you look at Jesse Creel, and so forth.
I think you haven't gone too far.
Let me land. So I look at the dynamics of that, and I think when I look at the South African football, it is only sold and marketed to a specific group. So I think we need to change that mindset and market it to even more groups. We have that discussion about why foreign, players that are born in South Africa but by descent they are other African nations. And this links into it because we're marketing our game to a specific mindset and a specific genre, to specific people, township football. And township football reminds me of what was happening in Brazil when Pele was playing. That football had a place, but they had to mix it with the rest of Brazilian football. So I think until we get that mix of maybe the township football with suburban football with other kinds of
European influence,
And there's a lot of academies in South Africa now that have cropped up in some of the northern suburbs here, and even in Cape Town and in Durban, where you find there's a lot more mix, a much better mix of talent, and even the way they play the game. It's so much has changed about how those kids that are age 5 to 10, 12, how they're being brought up. But you find that a lot of them don't make it into the mainstream teams in South Africa because they don't have that classy flavor.
Some of them are strikers.
No, they're very good.
You look at
strikers.
Very good. I go and watch some of the teams playing the Rand League. For instance, like in Randburg, there's the Randburg team, which is affiliated to Orlando Pirates. I watch some of the teams play against some of the teams from all around the city. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was in. It was the first time I was going there. Close to name of the other small. Is in Marlboro, close to Alex. A huge Indian population. I can't remember what the name of the place is now. No, it's not. I'll remember now. But I went to watch a tournament there. And it's just fine. I mean, I saw some Indian kids. There was this one that I couldn't get his name eventually, but he wore number 7. And this kid could do some incredible stuff with the ball. So you need to find a way where there has to be a lot more widespread integration.
And maybe that will change the emphasis to playing winning football, results-based football.
With goals coming.
Yes.
Because I'll give you an example, right? Look, there are just certain stereotypes you cannot rid a nation of, right? For example, stereotypically in South Africa, in sports like cricket, the black guys are typically the bowlers.
Yeah.
Comes along Themba Bavuma, who changes the narrative.
Yeah.
Okay? So that becomes a lightning rod. Stereotypically, the black guys in rugby and colored guys are the wingers.
Yeah.
Right? Then comes Siya Kolisi, right? Beast in Tawarira, that changed the narrative. Mm. So what I'm saying is that, there is probably a narrative that is lost there that we might have to bring into soccer, where stereotypically we are playing a certain way, but throw in an Indian kid, throw in a colored kid, throw in a white kid, throw in an Afrikaans kid.
I mean, the spine of the team that won the AFCON in 96, there was Toby. And Fish at the back.
Mushroom.
And there's Williams. Check a check there. And then there was Tinkler in the middle.
Orange,
in the middle. So you find that there's a lot that needs to change about.
Can I supplement that? The American basketball team, I remember reading something about this some years ago. That was the problem they had in basketball in America. Because of the race relations, the white section was playing basketball in this way.
They used to have different leagues.
Exactly. But then the Dream Team in 92 came about, and the mix, you had Larry Bird, Pete Maravich, then you had Michael Jordan, you had
John Stockton.
John Stockton
was white.
John Stockton, yeah. But that mix right? So, made it they were formidable.
So in trying to wrap it up, we're saying that there isn't enough diversity in the way that we play the game.
That's true.
Long and short of it.
So here's my question then. And I was having a discussion about why on earth has someone like Gavin Hunt not had an opportunity to coach the national team? Because if you look at his results, the man does the job. You look at success, there's very little, if anyone who's as successful as he is. Is it because, and I mean, we know his style of football. We know how he plays. And as much as some people might have a problem with it, it has gotten him results and his team's results. So do you feel that maybe that has played a role in maybe the powers that be?
Maybe because Gavin hasn't coached... because he's coached teams that are like underdog teams or teams that also don't have that pressure to play the way Sundowns, Chiefs, and Paris.
He doesn't have to please the fans. Coach the team where you have to please the fans.
So he's what he's done, and which is why I'm particularly happy about Benny McCarthy's success with Cape Town and even to an extent Tinkler, is we need to find a way around it and give these opportunities. Because I've always felt that Gavin Hunt should have been given a chance a while back to coach Bafana. Maybe if he did,
especially after Trott, because with
Hunt, you see how angry he gets on the touchline when you try to do any of those things, and he says like cut out all that fancy stuff, you know. But to his credit, Pizzo, because Sundowns actually combining the best of both in the year that they won the Champions League.
And do you know why that is? Do you know why that is? Because Pizzo has played abroad, and he knows that, listen, the shoe shining piano, first of all, right? He knows he had to bring that back. Mm. So in Pizzo's case, knowing that he's played abroad and locally, he knew the exact mix to bring into Sundowns and the exact players to sign to get that combination going.
Well, I mean, I think maybe Baxter is trying to take South African football into a better direction. And I'm not sure if it is a coincidence that Sean Bartlett comes into the picture as a coach who's going to work with the forwards and scoring goals, and then you score six. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that is a coincidence.
Maybe.
But
I mean, look, sometimes it helps.
Yeah.
I would even say, you know, for international games, bring in Benny as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you take out Benny McCarthy and Sean Bartlett, after their era, we've struggled to find strikers with the same kind of qualities. So maybe you need to bring them in, even if it's on an ad hoc basis.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I listened to Baxter say, you know, the idea with Sean is, you know, bring him in on an interim basis and see how it goes from game to game. Bring in Benny as well, and then let's see if there's something that can happen. Because I thought that, you know, if you had Benny McCarthy in both the Confed Cup and 2010 World Cup, South Africa would have done better. Mm-hmm. Maybe not necessarily him scoring a lot of goals, but just the his presence would have been such that he would have made others work better.
Like I said, with the other sports, cricket, bringing batting coaches, bowling coaches, fielding coaches, rugby, backline coach, scrum coach, and so forth. So why can't it be the same in football?
Well, maybe that's exactly something that needs to be looked at, because, while we are really happy about the six goals that we saw for the first time in I don't know how long our national team scored, it's still very much an issue, this goal-scoring thing. And I hope that it doesn't continue this weekend, because it is the Telkom knockout as far as the South African football is concerned, another cup competition, and some interesting fixtures to look forward to. We saw Pirates coming up against Chipper, it's Tinkler against his former side, Mosimane facing his friend in Kompela. Which of the ties, though, do you think sort of caught your eye?
To be honest with you, all three ties of the so-called big three, right, because they're all playing at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are eight games, so let's do the maths. If all three teams in Sundowns, Pirates and Chiefs win, that means in the last eight, in the next round,
yeah.
The quarterfinals, you have three of those teams in there, and yeah. there's a high possibility that, you know, they could face each other, and you yeah. could have a mouth-watering clash between those three,
yeah.
or if they all avoid each other,
and then
you know you yeah. could have a potential semi-final lineup yeah. of those three teams. So the fact that the big three are at home, you know, I do give them a slight edge. Pirates hosting Chippa, and Sundowns with Celtic, and Chiefs with Black Leopard. So if all three of those teams go through, man, I think the quarterfinals are lit.
Yeah.
I think on current form, they all look good.
Yeah.
And maybe something that we haven't seen in a long while is actually have all three of them make it through, and that would be great for the fans and great also for the game, because I want to see them more competitive.
Yeah.
Than they have been in the last few years.
I think especially with the two Soweto teams, the result this weekend will play a big part in how they build up for the derby as well,
yes.
coming up.
Yes.
But I mean, don't forget Davids, the defending champions. They also, they were not seeded for the draw, based on obviously how they finished the season last time out. But they are in with a good chance again, based on how they're playing at the moment. SuperSport United, the very same thing. Cape Town City, the same thing. So if we do get a picture where
I think we're getting something close to a top six now in South Africa.
Absolutely.
To be honest, Amika, I think we've had a top four for a very, very long time. Because I was talking about top three, but you know, how dare I forget SuperSport United?
Yeah. No,
I think I need to regress there and just change and say top four, because SuperSport United are definitely, you know, one of the top teams in South Africa. I apologize, SuperSport United, for that top four.
We can make a case for Wits as well.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying top six.
Yeah.
Wits, SuperSport United, and Cape Town City.
Yeah.
And then the other three.
Mm.
So you find that, you know, when they are, because we've seen Pirates and SuperSport United slump over the last 2 years because of playing too much in Africa.
Mm.
But you know, this season we
seems it might be coming for Sundowns.
Right? It will come for them. But
yeah.
What has helped Sundowns is the size of their squad, and also the fact that they have money to bring in one or two big players
every
now and then. So it will be great to have those six teams being in contention by the time all four of them, by the time we're done.
So it's a lot to look forward to as far as the Telkom Lockout is concerned. The opening round does get underway this weekend.
Only SuperSport can put you in a front row seat to the best football leagues this season. Catch every Premier League, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Nations League, ABSA Premiership and La Liga match live. And now, it's the only place to watch every minute of the Serie A on SuperSport 9. Get your front row seat and watch all the football that matters. Only on SuperSport.
Let's go over to England, where, again, I don't know what to read about this when a player, sort of in the media, he himself suggests that, Lord, I've got ambitions to go play for this team. Story of Eden Hazard, and to his credit, he started the season for Chelsea like a house on fire, probably playing his best football for Chelsea, which is saying something. But these Hazard, Real Madrid, this courtship is not coming to an end anytime soon.
You know, to be honest with you, I blame Real Madrid more than I blame Hazard, because Real Madrid, and it's a strange way I'm going to approach this, right? But follow me, okay? Real Madrid should have signed Hazard instead of Courtois, right? Replace Ronaldo.
I agree. 100%.
All of this is over for Chelsea.
Yeah.
All of this is over for Hazard. They both get a large sum of money, and there's your new number seven. There's your new star. Now, God forbid, touch wood, a lot can happen in 6 months, 8 months of the season.
Yeah.
Hazard can break his leg. Other teams, PSG, can all of a sudden just say, you know what, actually,
we've got the money.
We'll give you.
No, they're not going to pay anymore.
No. Hang on. They don't have a striker. They could say, we'll give you Cavani, and we'll give you some cash and give us Hazard.
Come and play
exactly.
Fourth line. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, is that, a lot can happen. So, I mean, look at Real Madrid. They're at a point where they thought that De Gea was a lockdown move, and then, they faxed me to cost them the 1 year.
That's the most ridiculous.
But now, in Hazard's case, I think, to be fair, if there's one player outside of, like I said, the Messis and Ronaldos, who means so much to their club, and I think, you know, can leave their club at any point of the day or night, and the fans wouldn't have a gripe, would be Eden Hazard.
Yeah.
He's given everything to the club. Mm. He's committed. He's performed. You've never heard issues of Hazard not coming to training, having squabbles or discipline and so forth. And I think right now would be the perfect time to sell Hazard. He's in the highest... in terms of his peak of his powers, and the value is good, and there's nothing, they're not in the Champions League this year, so it's not like there's nothing more they can get from Hazard, Chelsea, as far as they're concerned. So it's a good time for him to leave, and even if he comes out talking about it, you know, he's still locked his contract, so he's still going to give you 100%. Yeah.
And again, to his credit, he has been doing exactly that. But what would you read, Ibuka, in the players and his teammates, whenever they're being, you know, asked these questions about Hazard, in them saying, you know what, it's his decision to make. It's you know, of course we'd love to have him, to keep him here, but if he leaves, as Tony says, there won't be any animosity, because he has been absolutely
to his credit, he's always talked about wanting to play for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't begrudge him. I mean, as a Liverpool fan, I used to get so angry when I hear Suarez and Coutinho and everyone talk about their dreams of playing for those teams. But bottom line, at the end of the day, you know, he's under contract at Chelsea. The club can decide we don't want to sell, or we don't what we want to sell. And Hazard, the form that he's in now is pretty similar to how Ronaldo was in 2009 before he went to Real Madrid. Yeah. So maybe, you know, he'll motivate himself enough to have such a smashing season. And you know, if he's lucky and doesn't break his leg, like you doesn't break his leg, then everyone's happy at the end of the season if he goes to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
One thing Chelsea has come up, they've said that they're not going to sell him in January, which is a good thing. And you know, with the way Sarri has set up his team this season, the way they started, maybe it will be best for them to everyone if he stays until the end of the season, and I hope he does. But you know, he's not getting any younger, so his dream of playing for Real Madrid might still. And Real Madrid, by the way, do need a big ticket player, and maybe Hazard is setting himself up for, you know, I finish the season strong, and then you know, he's just a perfect player to go to Real Madrid, because if he went to Real Madrid at the end of last season, you know, would he be? You know, yes, I know he took Belgium very far in the World Cup, but you know, in the league, he didn't.
I mean, if he does go to Madrid, would that not signal the end of Isco's, I guess maybe influence?
To be brutally honest with you, the one thing I remember when Ronaldo went to Real Madrid, the issue that I always remember, you know, on my mind was. He sort of branded the CR7 just as he was leaving Madrid, and Raul had the 7.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, you know, is Raul suddenly going to give up the 7 and the roles and so forth? And
remember, he was CR9.
But it was all said, it was CR7 per se at United. So, you know, when you look at in Hazard's case, if they're going to sign a player for 200 million pounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not going to pay that much.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Well, whatever they're going to pay, right? But it's not going to be less than 100. Yeah. That's for sure. All right. So let's just use in that region of 100 and 200 million.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care even if it is whoever the manager is, son that is sitting in that position, whether it's the president of Spain, there's no way you're going to pay 150 million and you not prioritize that player.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think Neymar is starting to feel itchy about at PSG, because Mbappe was signed for that amount he was signed for 100 and something and he's won the World Cup and he's French playing for that team. So with the Hazard, so whoever is at the Real Madrid at the time, whoever was promised that you'd be the next star, you'd be the next Ronaldo, sorry Jose, but 150 million for Hazard, he is going to dictate everything the moment he gets.
Well, I hope he does not dictate nothing this weekend. Chelsea hosting Manchester United in the Premier League, and you know, we know. I think we all know.
Jose's gone this weekend. Here's another Newcastle messed it up.
But you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. Jose is going to, by hook or crook, win this game.
You know what's going to happen, right? We've seen him park buses before. Yeah. They're going to actually resurrect the Titanic, take it out the ocean, and punk it right in front of them.
He's going to go Matic, he's going to go Tomine, he's going to go Herrera, he's going to save his job.
But there's one thing that you underestimate about Jose. Last season, Man City was flying so high, and when you saw them also the park the bus, he actually beat Man City.
He did that because that only happened in the second half because he gave Pogba the license to go forward. We saw what happened in the first half. City were literally all over us.
So remember, what happened with Newcastle?
Yeah. So maybe he will. I mean, maybe he will. Because one thing about Jose is that he is one guy who knows how to prepare for games.
It is Mourinho.
No. I think
he did against West Ham.
Right? I think that win.
That win
last week. And then the break. Mm. If his players come back all complete,
yeah,
without injuries, I think he's going to have a plan in this game. And you know, he did it against Liverpool when they were going to run away with the title. Yeah. You know, got his plan spot on.
I think you're right. I mean, Mourinho he's always known how to prepare for.
But I must say, high stakes game for the first time in a, I think in my life.
Yeah.
I'm actually coming into a game where Manchester United are playing a team outside of Champions League, right,
yeah,
in England. And I'm saying that Man United actually don't have the weapons to deal with the opposing team.
Are you saying that about this game coming up?
They actually don't have the weapons to deal with Chelsea. They honestly don't. Yeah, you can tell me they've got Pogba, but Pogba is not Pogba Juventus.
Hmm.
Martial is not Martial Monaco coming into United.
Yeah.
Rashford is not Rashford under Louis van Gaal. Yeah. Lukaku is not Lukaku that we see in Belgium.
But we've seen them.
Right?
We've seen them.
I think
rise. We've seen them rise. Maybe the win against Newcastle might just be a tonic for them. It might be like that moment where the players.
Amika,
I don't think
a broken clock is right twice a day. So Jose Mourinho is not going to all of a sudden. Okay, against Newcastle, this is the plan that worked, and I'm suddenly going to change my ways. That's not going to happen.
I don't think they're undermatched, United. I think they are under-tacticked. That makes sense.
I tell you why I think they're undermatched.
Yeah.
Right? I tell you why I think they're undermatched. Because when I look at Chelsea's team, right, in terms of the players that are producing performance, United have players, but they're corpses.
Mm.
Right? They just have bodies there. Right? So if things go wrong for Chelsea, whichever one he may start, I don't know if Pedro is still injured, but you know, there's a William Pedro, right? There's a Giroud and a Morata in there, right? Okay, they're not scoring, but each provide their own sort of nuisance there up front. Okay, there's a Jorginho, there's a Fabregas that can still be thrown in the picture somewhere. Mm. Kante. Okay, so my point is, in terms of the players and where they sit on current form and their production, United are undermatched.
I agree with you.
Bodies, yeah, they've got bodies, they've got players.
In terms of production,
in terms of what they can do, they're undermatched.
I know, I agree with you. In terms of production, United definitely undermatched, and I think rightfully so, going to this one as underdogs. But then again, Mourinho, look, let me put it this way. I would be surprised if we lose. If we lose, I'll be like, right, Chelsea are playing better football at the moment. I would be surprised if we win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mourinho, should we win, takes all the credit for it, or wants the credit for it.
That also wouldn't surprise.
Exactly. But it is. It's a big game, and I think for Mourinho, it comes at a terrible time where his former side is doing really well, and they're going to give him a torrid time as well, the fans. We know that much. I'm not sure who Arsenal are playing this weekend, Ola.
Oh, we are hosting Leicester.
Right, so another 3 points.
It's not going to be easy.
It tells you a lot when Arsenal fans start being modest. It tells you that, you know, they're going the right direction.
Leicester are one of those teams that
going
Watford,
the right direction.
You know, they don't respect us anymore. But like you saw us when we handle Watford, we have to just back in your cage, boys. So.
Liverpool,
who's
Liverpool? Liverpool are playing against, I think it's...
Emeka does not know who Liverpool is playing. This is...
No, it's not one of those big games.
Salah, are we expecting to get back to goal
scoring? Liverpool are at Huddersfield.
At
Huddersfield.
Okay, yes.
So I see a 2-0 victory for Liverpool.
I think
Salah be on the score?
No. Salah is out. You know, maybe it's an opportunity for Klopp to rotate that team a bit. Mm. And bring in Salah, maybe even bring in Fabinho.
Mm.
And
Shaqiri,
actually in place of Salah. Mm. So that's, they will win the game.
Yeah.
Maybe by more than two.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Rather cast our eyes to Spain and La Liga, and Maradona, Messi, Messi, Maradona. Maradona has come out and he's had things to say. And as I did say before, you know, right at the start of the show, I never take anything he says seriously. But
can we run a, can we make sure that we get Maradona tested before?
I think that Maradona just needs to keep quiet. He needs to stay out of the way.
Yeah.
Messi doesn't have any point to prove to anyone. Yeah. He's done well. Look, Maradona won the World Cup in 86 because the coach built the team around him. I remember very well that, you know, when I was very young, the Argentine team, if you go and watch the videos of the team in 82, everybody in the team tried to be like Maradona. Because
yeah.
They had really skillful players, Mario Kempes, Ozzy Ardiles, Alberto Tarantini, Leopoldo Luque. They had so much talent in the team. All of them were dropped out. Only Pasarada, even Pasarada was on the bench throughout 86. So the coach built the team around Valdano and Burruchaga, and then they had even new defenders, goalkeepers, you know. So that team was built for Maradona, and the coach, Carlos Bilardo, said he had to do that to get the best out of Maradona. With Messi surrounded by, similar to Maradona in 82, you know, teams that had Aguero, Higuain, it's not difficult for the coach to fit them all into a team.
Especially when those names you've just mentioned have not taken responsibility.
But you know,
the
other issue I have whenever, you know, with all due respect, Pele also, you know, chimes in on these debates every couple of years. One year he'll say Ronaldo, one year he'll say Messi, because depending on who the sponsor is asking and so forth, you know. So I pay less attention, because in Maradona's case, I think, you know,
he's scared that Messi will eclipse him. That's the thing.
He's scared, and he's holding on to the fact that he did win the World Cup.
Pele also used to do that when they talk about
Brazilian Ronaldo.
Maradona. When they talk about Maradona.
I don't know when they talk about Ronaldo, but I remember specifically, even with Brazilian Ronaldo, when they were bringing up the comparisons, and Pele used to always bring up the fact that, you know, okay, he's got that one, you know, he needs to push for another two, like I have, sort of thing. So there'll always be something to those guys that they feel that, you know, the guys in their so-called shadow, you know, have to do. But I think in Maradona's case with Messi, you know, he coached Messi in the 2010 World Cup, right? So he was able to see.
He did as much coaching as I guess he felt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think in his case, you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's okay for him to scrutinize because he's coached Messi. But what I think in Maradona, you know, side of the bias that he comes into is that, you know, he's seen Messi. He's probably seen maybe similar or maybe some flaws that he thinks Messi has, having coached him. So he feels like, okay, I can have a right to say this because I've actually worked with the guy.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I think he's just jealous.
Either way, I lean very much towards that as well. I think he just knows that the smaller, younger Argentine, who wears number 10 as well, is just, he's got a bit more.
Don't forget, there are many players who were touted as the next Maradona. Yeah. There was Riquelme, Pablo Aimar, there was, you know, so many players, you know, and then Messi is the one guy who, you know, not only.
And the irony is,
for a lot of people, in fact, for me, I think that, you know, the way Messi, you think the ball and Messi talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know.
And just to before we do move on, to back that up, I remember, I think it was Diego Simeone. He said that in Argentina, yes, we've got Diego Maradona. We see him as our god, but in Lionel Messi, he's Diego Maradona every game he plays.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, those one or two moments that have, I guess, crowned Maradona. In Messi, Maradona, he's Maradona every game he plays.
Yeah, Maradona's argument that there's a different Messi that turns up for Argentina, you know, I just think that, you know, that's like a stab in the back because he knows the circumstances under which he triumphed for Argentina. And, and the game has changed, you know. The game then and the game now, the game is a lot more scientific. Teams mark spaces, they do all sorts. And that's why he was a failure as a coach, because he still came with that old mindset. So
I was about to make the point that, listen, Messi had to survive Maradona as a coach. But, I mean, just a segue into what's coming up in La Liga. Big game, top of the table. There's a new leader, and the team goes by the name of Sevilla. They are setting the standard at the moment. They are hosting Barcelona, and I guess if you were Sevilla to pick the perfect time to face Barcelona, it would be after international break, when they aren't quite doing as well as they should in the Liga.
Look, in Sevilla's case, you know, this happens periodically for them where they find themselves here. So
that's very true.
This
yeah.
clash for them, they'll go gung-ho to beat Barcelona because Barcelona aren't on a good run themselves. I think they have now 4 games without a win in La Liga. And, you know, perfect time to play them. But, you know, teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid, you know, they've seen this for hundreds of yeah. years. So even if Sevilla do win, it's when Sevilla have to go travel to Levante,
yeah.
when Sevilla have to go to Celta Vigo, when Sevilla, you know, play Villarreal. So they may beat Barcelona. I think they've got a very good chance of beating Barcelona.
Yeah.
In fact, Barca struggled. It wasn't for Messi last year.
Do you remember that game?
Yes,
yeah.
It wasn't for Messi last year. So, you know, I think they've got a good chance of beating Barca. You know, Barca aren't... there's something quite not right with them in the league this year. And I know they're also having problems off the pitch. Something with Arturo Vidal... Usman Dembele, things are not looking like they're working out well. So it's a good time for them to play Barca. But in terms of the context of the league, teams like Sevilla, unfortunately, you have to wait down the stretch because they are the sort of guys that really start well but then have hiccups further down the road because the talent, obviously...
Emika, not really a title decider this.
No. I mean, it is not. I mean, like you said, you know, You can win this one game, but then you know what happens. What happens down the line?
Yeah.
Can they be consistent? But we would like to see more teams win the title. I actually listened to an interview where Tebas was interviewed, the president of La Liga, and he said, you know, he thinks that La Liga's, you know, if you combine the economics and the sporting side, they are the best league in the world. And but it cannot be a league of two teams.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a league that has, like Premier League has about top six now.
Yeah,
it needs to have that to lay claim to that. And we're seeing a bit of that with Sevilla and Atletico Madrid.
I'm disappointed in Valencia and Villarreal. They are struggling to sort of get the season started. But I hear exactly what you're saying. Bilbao as well, also done, I think, 16th or 17th, which isn't quite, you know, doesn't quite sound right if you think about Athletic Bilbao and, you know, the ability that they have and the players that they do have. Okay, so that's pretty much everything that is on the pitch. Off it, a lot has been happening over the past week or so as well, including Thierry Henry becoming a coach at Monaco. And I mean, it's going to be the first real big task on his hands as a coach, and perhaps no longer hiding behind the wing of not really hiding, but he no longer does have Roberto Martinez, you know, as the face. Now he has to take on the challenge himself. And going from player to coach, Ola, we've seen people try it. Hasn't quite worked all the way for a lot of people. For Thierry, what do you think?
I tell you one thing that worries me about Thierry Henry, which is the same thing that worried me about Zidane. But there's one thing that Zidane had over Henry, is that the reputation that Zidane built off the field as a person, right, is sort of the same qualities that, you know, as a player you would admire to see, you know, does his business, comes in, doesn't make a fuss, and he's a brilliant player. With Thierry Henry, there's something about his personality that doesn't sort of inspire, you know what I mean? He doesn't have that presence of Thierry Henry's walking in the room and everybody, you know, like schoolboys backs up and morning sir sort of thing.
Yeah.
Zidane had that when he walked into Real Madrid. And I worry about Thierry Henry because he didn't build that reputation as a player, right? If you ask most people, top 10 greatest players in the world, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find some people that would be, okay, Thierry Henry has to be up.
He hasn't gone to Arsenal. So he's gone to Monaco where he was a Monaco star, you know, in his early days before he went away. So, you know, there's less pressure.
And
I think he's starting at a place where he's very...
Is there less pressure?
Yeah. Well, look. Less than if he was made coach of Arsenal. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's done well working with Martinez.
Yeah.
This is his chance. And just like we've seen with Lampard and Gerrard and Zidane before
him. But my problem is that when Zidane took over at Real Madrid, okay, he had no pressure because he's playing with house money. He was interim at the time, and there was no ambition to sign Zidane long term. Mm. So Zidane was free to say, okay, you know what, let me give this a shot with what I want to do.
He can try. If he fails, he can go back to working with Martinez or working on TV.
In Henri's case, okay, he has to resurrect a team that was in the Champions League semi-finals, a team that won the league just 2 years ago. Give so him, my point
him,
is, I'm going to give him the benefit of
the
doubt.
You're an Arsenal fan.
But my problem
is he jumped into a situation too big. Listen,
Lampard and Gerrard did not jump into this caliber.
Let's give him a couple of games. And then we can have this conversation.
Okay. All right. So with him, it's an interesting move. I think we can all agree with that. It's an interesting move, and I guess it's the latest we've seen, as you mentioned, Gerrard, Lampard. It's the latest sort of big name.
I mean, John
Terry's
assistant manager at Aston Villa
now as well. So they're also going into their managerial roles, and we are yet to see really. And I mean, I'm even looking as far back as someone like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who, yes, now he's doing well back home, but he had to start and had to struggle at first as a coach. So,
give them a chance.
Yeah, no, give them the benefit of the doubt.
He left the Nigeria job and went to Europe and took a team to promotion. So
yeah.
You never know.
But I think, yes, very big shoes to fill. Before he was fired, another Jardim did do a really good job. But I guess it all comes to an end. There's a cycle, and ended for Jardim, but it starts for Thierry Henry, who's going to be coach now at Monaco. Well, that's pretty much all we do have then, episode 10 of Pitch Invasion, and when we do come back, the next time we are with you, Manchester United would have beaten Chelsea,
have a manager.
Liverpool would have lost, Arsenal would have been held, and
prediction, Liverpool and Huddersfield 5-0.
I'm not sure based on how you guys have been playing the past year. We'll see. And prediction, Arsenal?
You know, 3-1.
Arsenal win.
3-1.
Arsenal win.
Lacazette and
Aubameyang.
Yeah. And maybe Ramsey scoring.
Will be, by the way, absolutely brilliant for Nigeria.
Yeah.
Thanks for the right club, bro. Thanks for the right club.
He's on fire.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all we do have for episode 10 of Pitch Invasion. We'll see you guys next time. Up until then, cheers for now.
Cheers.
Cheers.